of losing money in the stock market roller coaster? Frustrated with the government taxing you into oblivion? Worried about inflation? How do you prepare for so many financial uncertainties? Welcome to the show that will help you develop your game plan. The Financial Quarterback with Josh Jelinski. Josh is a noted financial advisor and president of the Jelinski Advisory Group, and he's here to answer your questions. Call into the show at 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Now let's kick off your financial future. Here's Josh Jelinski.
Hi, everybody. This is Josh Jelinski, the Financial Quarterback, and we are with the exciting guest, Daylene Higgins, financial coach for Gen Xers. We'll figure out when does Gen X start and end? That's always a debate. And host of the Wealth After 40 podcast. Being brave in her career and personal budgeting, she was able to retire at age 50. We're going to hear all about that. So, Daylene, talk about your background. What made you a financial guru?
Well, I got my accounting degree. I don't know if that makes me a financial guru as opposed to personal finances. Yeah, so I did that. I worked in law enforcement for 32 years, but the last 15, I supported the law enforcement personnel, lieutenants, chief deputies, and the sheriff and the undersheriff in budgeting a $62 million budget. And so that, as well as doing my own finances to be able to retire. So when I retired at 50, I took an immediate 40% cut in pay. So I'd planned and prepared for that. So, you know, I love numbers. I'm a numbers nerd. That's what they, you know, lovingly called me there. So it was good.
Where did you run that budget? A county?
Yes. Yep. It was a county budget. So it was quite a bit. There was a lot of moving parts, a lot of moving pieces. When I first started there, it was closer to like a $40 million budget. So it grew over 15 years as a county there, growing and all of those things, different services and support. And obviously wage increases were a big part in there as well. So yeah.
So we're going to talk with Wealth After 40 coach Daylene Higgins about the struggles that people have after 40. And also, so what county was it, if you don't mind it saying?
No, I don't mind saying it at all. It was Utah County, in Utah, obviously. So the county itself is 500,000 plus in population. I don't remember square miles. We cover quite a bit. We have lake, we have mountain, we have desert, you know, interstates, highways, all of the things. And, you know, basically they were serving all of those areas. We had support. We had, you know, ran the jail. The jail was an 800 bed jail. And typically it was near capacity, but not capacity during that time. So a lot of, you know, money spent there on keeping the inmates safe and clothed and, you know, fed. All of those things were part of what I did, as well as contract cities. We had a couple of contract cities. These are smaller cities that aren't able to provide their own law enforcement or would rather have experienced law enforcement be provided for them for a cost. We have search and rescue. And like I said, we have the mountains. So that was very, very busy.
And Utah's been growing too. So you probably, like you said, the budget grew from 40 million to
$60 million.
So how do you go? Okay, so you retire. You take a 40% pay cut in retirement. How did you survive on 40% less? Because we all hear about that, you know, you're supposed to retire on, what is it, 70% is the general rule of your pre-retirement income and you're okay. But how did you make the switch from working to retired?
So my husband had done the switch about 3 years before myself. So as a household, you know, we took a 40% cut there, which wasn't quite as much. And I didn't let him go back to work. He wanted to go back to work somewhere else. So I said, nope, you can't. We've got to make sure we are living on our pension and our pension only. I don't want to have retired early and not be able to survive. And so then when my turn came, we did the same thing as well. We have been living on that. I chose to become a financial coach, mainly off of the excitement and that feeling I had when I reached my goal. And I thought, I've got to help other people reach whatever their goal is. They may not want to retire early, but I think we all want to retire. And that's definitely a challenge for those over 40. I was on a call last night with a female who says, I feel like I'm behind and I'm trying to catch up. And it was just, it was really hard to see her in that space. But at the end of the call, we were able to get her into a more positive space. She's more hopeful now, but she's, you know, got her goals and she's got her pathway, and that's what she's headed for.
And we're going to be talking about the difference between financial coaching and financial advice. But you have this now big podcast, Wealth After 40, Wealthy After 40.
Yes, yes.
How do you explain the success? I mean, my producer says you're one of the, you know, top podcasters in the space.
I honestly don't know, because I have only been podcasting. I am about 15 days, 20-ish days away from my one-year anniversary. I think I've just been able to hit a niche, a genre, a market that is not being served. In fact, that was the call last night. She's like, nobody's talking to those of us after 40. And I said, I didn't realize that empty hole. That was just the people I wanted to serve, is those individuals around my age. And not saying I'm 40, it's a little higher than that. But anyways, you know, she's like, nobody is talking to us. And I said, I can understand that. I was in a networking meeting and I told them, you know, who I help and serve. And she's like, why are they like, I have two millennials come out and say, why are you helping them? They should have had it figured out by now. And I found like, oh my gosh, there is really an empty hole here. And I think that's why it's taken off so well. I just hope I am serving people in the areas that they need. I keep reaching out. So
my producer, Josh, you know, he has a list of like the top retirement focused podcasts. And, you know, that's how he found you. So this is exciting.
Awesome.
So you're basically, you just put your shingle out there, started doing your podcast. So you don't have this big retirement budget. So you're just doing your podcast and you kind of went viral. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just me. It's my space. It's only me. I don't have any VA or podcast manager. It's literally just me. Sometimes I feel like I'm flying by the seat of my pants, but every time I get ready to record a solo episode, because I'm leaning into that really more this year than I did last year, but I'm also very picky about the guests I bring on. I want a variety, but I want them serving the age group that I am focused at and trying to hit on all those different areas and support them. So,
well, I think part of your success is your humility, right? Like you're just a breath of fresh air. You're not like, I have this team.
You know? Right, right.
You know, you just put it out there, and I think people just resonate. Like we've had some people, you know, with big podcasts, and they're a little more, you know, you got to talk to my people, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, nope, I'm my people.
So your company is called Elevate Finances. You help Gen Xers ditch debt, save for retirement, and make dreams a reality. You know, it's interesting. When I first started my career, the reason I love this is I found the exact same niche that you do. So my first 100 clients were all Gen Xers. And I ended up, for whatever reason, you know, the market, you know, our business took off. But I always have a soft spot for kind of my first 100 clients. They were regular people with regular savings. Nothing, you know, they were teachers, they were police. And I found they were woefully underserved. Like nobody talked to them. And the people that did talk to them, like if you had a 403B, they were getting screwed by the 403B person. They were being overcharged on their mutual funds. They were getting no counsel even. So if like they charged a fee and they were, I helped a lot of New Jersey teachers and police, and they would refer me. And that was how I built my first 25 to 50 million as a company. Like just helping, you know, $50,000, $500,000. Then over time we started helping people. So I always have a soft spot. If somebody wants to start saving early, you know, we never had a minimum. We still don't have a minimum to help, because yesterday I just helped a couple make 150 grand a year. They have 74 grand in the bank. They're 30. So they're a little more successful than the average 30-year-old, and they have a disposable income of, they have 7 grand a month to start saving. And there really aren't firms that even help those people, you know, generally speaking. So this is great. So Gen Xers, why do you think Gen X, first define Gen X, or is it just more of a general, you know?
Really, I do attract anybody over 40. But Gen Xers are 1985. I believe there's sometimes a little bit there that's like, oh, it's only 1980, but down to 1965. So about that 18-ish year gap. So 43 to 58 right now, I think is the ages. It might've jumped up by a year since I've been doing this. But most of them, and the reason why I feel like the Gen Xers are struggling a little bit is not necessarily income and earning. There just was not a lot out there. And one of my episodes early on the podcast, I talked about the financial events that happened during our time of Gen Xers. So from 1965 until that 1980. And, you know, 401s, and that was all new then. So our parents, our grandparents, they did not have that. So we did not have somebody already emulating that for us. We kind of had to figure it out ourselves. And so coming into that, and, you know, you talk about your teachers and your police, I was government as well, trying to find help and the advice. I would go into those one-on-one sessions with the financial, I don't know, financial advisors. I think they were, they didn't seem to be, because I'd be like specifically asking them these questions. I'm like, I need to know this and this and this. And they'd give me, I could tell what was a spill. And I'm like, I don't. So it was a really hard market out there and to explore that. But I'm just hoping to educate people and help them feel supported through these next, you know, 15, 20 years to retirement. And hopefully they can view that retirement is a possibility. Gen Xers, we worked forever doing, you know, paper routes to our lemonade stands to, you know, supporting the neighbors and doing things like that, getting jobs at 15 at McDonald's. That was a thing back then. So Gen Xers really don't know anything but work. And so trying to help them feel like they will have money, they can do this, and retirement looks different ways for people. So
I think you hit the nail on the head. Gen Xers, the reason why they didn't save much for retirement is they came of age. I mean, I'm close to Gen X, and our parents were broke, or they had a pension, or they had a 401k that lost half of its value as we were coming of age. So we kind of had a general distrust for the market. And I even remember from 2000 to 2002, internet newsletter writers. So then you were prey like, oh, you're going to lose 50% the next 9/11 crash. And then 08 came. And so there was a general distrust of the stock market as a place to put money in for the long haul. Whereas if you're in your 20s and 30s, a lot of millennials, they kind of get, hey, I got to save 15% of my 401k. It was sort of ingrained in them. So you retired from the government sector at 32 years. If somebody wants to retire early, what are your big tips? And then we'll help like regular people. We'll go to the people who want to retire early, or maybe people listening who are retired. Like, what are your tips?
The one tip, and I don't know if anybody else gives this, is I always point at, you know, getting rid of debt if they can, because debt, lowering debt means less demand on the income you actually need in retirement. So, you know, I love to help them view it from that respect, as well as continue to save. It'll continue to grow. I know that some people are like, oh, but I don't have enough money and by this age. And I said, okay, but as you're going up, as you retire, that money's still going to grow. So, you know, just be mindful of that. There's a lot of, yeah, like lack of education, lack of understanding. So I love to support them in expanding their mindset, expanding to that. But I always say continue to save, but let's start looking at the debt piece. You've got a lot of debt. You might still be putting kids through college. Let's work on that piece, because that's less demand you will have in retirement. And then you'll feel more capable and competent to be able to retire.
So let's talk about debt payoff. What's a simple plan you'd start with if you want to be debt free?
I always have clients work through what does their debt look like. We do an inventory of it, so they have that awareness built behind it. Because sometimes they're like, I just got to get rid of it. So we got to narrow it down. We've got to look at it, spend some time with it. And then I talk about all the strategies. There's the debt snowball, the debt avalanche. There's Robert Kiyosaki's method. There's also another method that is really emotional baggage. If there's one, like you had a credit card you used to get out of a marriage, and every time you pay it, you're like, oh my gosh. So we review all that. And then I have them choose one. Because really just getting out of debt, while you can talk about the numbers and spending more interest here or there, the strategy is only going to work for the individual that they identify with. So once they choose which one they want to start with, I tell them to forget all the rest. Our focus is on this one. We're just going to pay it off. We're going to be minimums on the rest, and we're just going to keep going, you know, and then definitely doing that snowball within, but then we review those debts again. Okay, how are you feeling? Want to keep going the road that we planned initially, or have things changed? Because, you know, a lot can happen over even just a year. You could have a promotion or a job loss on the flip side of that. And so just exploring what their needs are, and then we tackle another one. But staying focused on one debt is easier for somebody instead of going, oh my gosh, I have all of that debt. And then they're wanting to hop around. So really just getting them focused and getting them to pay it down. As they work through one or two debts, depending on how many they have, I always like to discuss that snowball amount. So now you might have $2,000. How do you feel about savings? And we can adjust and make that swap between debt payoff and savings amount, because, you know, they're working on the both at this moment, definitely as a Gen X, or they need to keep growing their savings and building that. But even before we hit debt, I've got to make sure that they are stable. They've got to have emergency funds. They've got to be set up for any of those sneaky expenses, or so like they call, but they're the once a year, twice a year expenses that are regular that they forgot in their monthly budgeting. So I love to direct them down that path first. Then we hit debt, and then we talk about debt and savings together.
So what is the debt snowball for people who don't know what it is? Define that, and then define the debt avalanche.
Okay, so the debt snowball is the smallest amount of a loan, so the smallest total, and you are paying that off first. The debt avalanche goes to the highest interest rate, and so you start with that one, and typically that takes a little bit longer. So the difference between the two that I'd like to talk to my clients about is a snowball is going to give you a quick win. Are you that type of a person who you need to see that and you need to have that celebration early to keep the momentum going? Or are you somebody that can stay the course and really the cost of the interest is more pressing, more driving to you? And so really that's how I talk through both of those.
If somebody's looking to cut something out of their budget to start paying out a debt, where do you start? Cutting cable, renegotiating insurances? What do you do?
So my very first session, we build a budget with three categories. And so within those three categories, they're kind of set up as bills. So they're being covered. We're having spending, which is groceries, fuel, entertainment, eating out, all of those things. So it can be a combination of both. There's a couple of different exercises within that as we do that. Naturally, clients will almost just say, okay, I don't need that anymore, or this is really ridiculous. And so it's almost a natural thing on their part. I don't make any suggestions. I just say, you know, how do you feel with this leftover? Because there's always a bucket amount for savings. And then we start approaching that. I'm working with a client right now. She said, my debt is growing. I don't know what's wrong. And we work together after two sessions. She says, oh, I don't have my savings strong enough to build me up. After our third session, she's like, I'm ready to hit it hard and running. And I'm like, okay. So building that into that savings bucket is where it really becomes. And then they naturally lean into, if I could have this, that would feel so much better. Then I say, okay, go to your expenses. And instead of thinking about cutting it out, because that's what a lot of people are like, get rid of stuff. I always like to say to them, pause. Or reduce. If you're so gung-ho on getting rid of this debt, could you pause a subscription or a membership or eating out for 3-6 months? And then recognizing that it's not gone and it will come back, they kind of tend to lean into that one better. So,
what about people who struggle with budgeting? Like, I don't think I've ever budgeted. I just save I mean, my kind of philosophy is just save a bunch of money and you'll have money for emergency. You know, so more getting your savings 20% of your pay.
Yeah.
And then if there's an emergency, then you tap your savings then, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Lots of individuals are not like really defined structure. I love the detail and I love to get in the weeds with mine. So if there is a client and he is like, I really want to be in the weeds, I'll go in the weeds with them. But most of my clients are like, I just make it simple. I don't want to spend a lot of time, but I don't want to be overspending every month. And so, yeah, I do that with that, the three buckets, and then we create a cash flow system that serves those three buckets. And really it gets them future forecasting, looking ahead to be able to support those emergency buckets. So savings, you know, buckets, so sinking funds and all of that. And so they're a whole different mindset as opposed to tracking your spending and make sure you're not overspending becomes, I have this bucket of money for savings and how is it going to serve me? And it's really done well for with those more creative minds who are not as, you know, nitty gritty details.
Why even find people we see, they got $2 million saved for retirement, they don't do a budget. They're like, we're fine, you know, and the budget causes a fight with their spouse or something. So, but they were just natural savers. You know, they save 15% of their pay. I would contend if you're saving 15% religiously for 30 years, you're probably not going to need a budget. But I always take people through a very nitty gritty budget process when they're going to retire or when they become a client, because I want people to know where the money is going.
Yes.
Because
awareness is huge.
Because that awareness is like, man, I'm spending this on this. You know, I'm spending this much. I'm spending $10,000 a year on Starbucks. and I'm going to become my own barista. what are some other ways where people, if they go, I just can't find the money, what are some things that you found working with your clients where they can find more money?
So I take them through a values exercise, like what they honestly value in life. And we make sure that they're spending or saving to support those values. And as we naturally do that, they kind of open up to seeing other things. Like I said, the one exercise I do is make a list of bills so that you can reference it when you do your payday moves. And my one client, she's like, well, I canceled three. It was her subscriptions because they were bills with a due date monthly. So they had to go in that sector. She's like, I canceled three of them. And so there's a lot of these exercises that just kind of naturally help them find the money and create that desire. I think leading clients more into what do you want on the flip side, even with debt, what is it that you want out of life? Where do you want to be spending your money? And so are these expenses serving you well? And kind of taking them down that rabbit hole as opposed to, you know, them just saying, I can't find any money.
Hey, this is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. We'll be back after these messages. The 10% Happier podcast is one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn. So why not master it? Hosted by Dan Harris, a journalist who had a panic attack on national television and then set out on a journey of transformation. He's now on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. I sound a little bit like him. Every week, Dan talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity in wide-ranging topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. The interviews cover everyone from Brené Brown to Alexander Draymond to Sam Harris. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. Find 10% Happier wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tune in to the financial quarterback, Josh Jelinski, then learn how to protect your financial future in a down economy. Josh and his team at the Jelinski Advisory Group can help you lower your taxes and lower your risk in these uncertain times with a 27-point checklist designed to improve your financial health. Whether you're worried about runaway prices, fear of an upcoming recession, or a stock market meltdown, tune in to the Financial Quarterback and count on Josh Jelinski to call the play. for a free copy of Josh's book, The Retirement Reality Check. Call 888-988-5674. That's 888-988-5674. Or visit jalinski.org. That's JALINSKI.org.
We're with Daylene Higgins, overnight sensation of the Wealthy After 40 podcast, talking about getting out of debt. If you have questions on money management, financial coaching, financial tips, getting out of debt, we're here. I'm going to cut some subscriptions after this call.
I need to do a few myself as well.
What do you think about the coffee debate? There's in the budgeting circles, you know, Susie Orman says that if you buy coffee every morning, it's like peeing $1 million down the drain. Kevin O'Leary has said similar things. And Jared Dillian writes, this is a great little article. I buy coffee for $3.81 just about every morning from Dunkin' Donuts. Let's say I buy 225 days a year of coffee. That's 900 per year. Over 40 years, it's $36,000. I suppose if you invest that a long way, you'd have 100 grand for retirement. So Orman's against coffee. This guy ends up being, hey, drink the coffee because you enjoy it in life. Where would you fall on that spectrum?
Well, first of all, I love coffee. So, you know, but I do make it at home because I hate to go out in the morning now that I'm retired. But yes, you can't have all the pleasures out there. So that's the same, my same ideal with eating out, maybe doing DoorDash, that type of thing. You can't have all of those things. Is it going to wreck your budget if you do all of them? Yes. If you do one of them, probably not. We've got to enjoy life and understand how to live within our means. I think that's a bigger thing and what brings us joy. I think a lot of people get caught up in the creating bills just to pay bills. Oh, so-and-so said, you know, just like your subscription. So-and-so said about the Google subscription. So I got to go get that now. Well, are you doing that because you need it or because so-and-so said it? You know, again, it's that keeping up with the Joneses mentality, which I think Gen Xers can identify with. I don't think the lower, you know, younger generations can, but really, I don't know. I don't know what a latte costs every day, but if that's your thing you do and you take your lunch to work and you don't eat out that often, then yeah, that's your one exclusion and go enjoy it. If that brings you, I always love to Marie Kondo, look at your expenses. What brings you joy? And that's one of the questions I ask my clients before our first session is, I want you to tell me the three top expenses that bring you joy that you could not live without. And then I want you to list three expenses that you're like, I don't know why I have these and I would be okay if they were gone. So right there, as we're headed into session one, if we do find that we're in a deficit, I can tell him, you told me you'd be fine without these three. How are you feeling about that? Because you already have these other three that bring you so much joy.
Yeah, I thought that was like woo-woo, you know, like, you know, kind of kooky. I'm more into numbers like you. But I did try the whole spark joy. There's the Marie Kondo of finance. His name's Ken Honda. You ever hear this guy? He wrote like the financial book. And the idea is very similar, but it's to kind of figure out what sparks joy. I think that's good. This guy, Dillian, is anti-Susie Orman, and he's pro-sparking joy, too. It's like, if that coffee brings you... He also says, I've tried bringing lunch to work. And then he says he's tried, and I eat this miserable salad at my desk and contemplate the miserable experience, miserable existence. I have a bottle of Newman's Own on my desk, and I put together a salad and temper. Apparently, it brings him... I'll spend 9 hours in my office uninterrupted without ever leaving. Going out to lunch brings me joy. It's worth the $4,000 a year. If you make 100 grand, you can afford to go out to lunch. I do think it does depend on what you make, right? Like if you're making 30 grand a year, you gotta make the sacrifices to get out of that rut. If you're making 100 grand, you know, you could maybe afford those. So we were talking about debt. Any other topics on debt before we move on to building wealth?
You know, I have several of my community members. So I have a Facebook group, All Things Personal Finance. And there's several of them that are like, I am never going to pay off my mortgage. How can I pay off my mortgage? So I tackled that last month during my debt challenge in there. And I said, calculate what an extra payment is a year and start there. Maybe you can do 1 a year, maybe you can do 2 a year, and add that on every single month. And that, you know, at least gets you start rolling. I think they get so caught up in that large mortgage amounts. Most of them, that's all they have for debt now. And they just see that large number. And I'm like, you've got to tackle it by one payment, extra payment at a time. So that really gave them some inspiration. And hopefully they're starting to make progress. It's only been about a month since we talked about it.
So where do you fall? Do you like getting rid of the mortgage debt, or would you prefer people save for retirement first?
It's
the age-old personal finance question, you know.
Yeah. And I know some people are like, I will never get rid of my mortgage. I do not have a mortgage right now. And I'll tell you, it's the best thing ever. It is the best thing ever. It was one of the things that solidified the fact I could take my 40% cut in pay and enjoy my lifestyle with no changes. My husband and I still live just like we did when we were working, even with that 40% cut in pay. But yet, coming into it, if the savings is not quite there for retirement, I would hold off on that payoff of the debt on the mortgage. But you know, you've got to evaluate dollar for dollar what that would mean for you.
What about college, saving for college for kids? Do you like it? Do you not like it? I'm souring on the whole idea.
I think it... You know, and I tell people, I paid for my daughters. I could. I only have one child and, you know, gave her education, supported the choice of what she was getting her education in. She's now working and doing well. But yet, if that would have foregone me being able to pay off my mortgage or not retire early, I probably would have told her, no, you're on your own. I made my way on my own and it was just fine. So I really think people should evaluate. I did an interview, it has not gone live on my podcast yet, with an individual who he talks about it really well. He had two kids, started saving when they were little in their 529s, and told them, you're only going to have this much. I'm only going to be able to support you in this way. And so his kids knew going into college that they had about a year to 2 years covered, and then they would have to go from there. So,
yeah, I'm of the opinion, like, I have a very low interest rate on my mortgage. I'll keep it forever, save the difference. But it is unique how many people who've paid off their mortgage don't want to go back. They like the feeling of having no mortgage. I think it's a personality. I think that emotional comfort that it gives a lot of people is nice. What risks are you taking now that you're retired? Like, how much would you suggest? Somebody's retired. How much should they have in the market? All those things.
So I, you know, you were mentioning creating a budget for retirement. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Create your estimated budget. What are you going to be spending? What are you truly going to be spending in your retirement? Yes, there's that 70%, 80%. I'm not spending that. I'm spending 60%. But that was due to all of the savings I was putting into my 401 and that one, you know, out of my regular income. But It just, you know, you've got to explore that. And once you figure out how much you're going to be spending, and if you want to travel and include that, if you don't want to travel, I'm not a traveler, so we're not doing that. And then once you get your number for the year, I think that times 25 gives you a good ballpark. Do you need to 100% hit it? Maybe, maybe not. You know, I think there's a lot of growth that can happen in, so me retiring at 50, my husband retiring at 53, we are not eligible for any of our 401s. And I rolled mine into an IRA. So I have that. So, you know, those are sitting there waiting for us. At that point, we will have more money. We'll be able to, you know, do something different if we choose. But, you know, it's just, if you want to retire early, you have to plan for that gap. You have to be investing in investments outside of your retirement plans, which I did as a government employee with my 457. So I do have that. But really, for me, it's more like an emergency or an elevation type plan. It's just kind of sitting there waiting for me. It's still growing, still serving me well. So
Let's talk about your 25, 26-year-old daughter. You're helping her kind of on her financial journey. Is she listening to you, number one?
Yes, she is. So she graduated, it'll be almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years in May. She got her a quote, adult job, as I like to call it, a career job, a year ago in October. And she's one that really is good at saving. She knows how to save. She also knows how to spend on shoes. That's her downfall, but you know that that's her one and only downfall. She really recognized, especially when inflation hit, she's on her own, that groceries went up. She's like, it used to only be $50 a week and now it's $75. I'm like, yes, ma'am, that's inflation and you've got to be prepared for that. So helping her on her journey and recognizing how to save, getting a well-paying job. She's also in the government, so she has access to a pension. I think she likes that idea, having seen mom and dad do that as well. But she's actually earning really good money and supporting herself. She bought a really nice car and she's like, I can do it. I'm young. I don't have a whole lot going on. And, you know, I remember that at that age. I'm like, yep, I remember having the sports car, that fancy sports car, and she loves her car. So she called me. It's been probably a month ago. And she'll tell me about what her coworkers and friends are doing. I wish they would know this. And how do they not know that? And she's just talking about being able to take a loan and what that means. One girl was sitting on cash for a car and she's like, I need to get a loan. And she's like, why? And so, you know, she's like, I just don't understand why not everybody knows this. And I said, well, not everybody has a personal finance guru living in their home with them, but she has done really well. She has done really well.
What do you make sure she knows about finances as a millennial? Like, is she saving 15% of her pay? What's she doing?
So she is putting into her pension, but she's also putting into her 401. So making sure that she's getting, I said, the sooner you get in, the less you have to do. And make sure, you know, I advised her, I said, because she's like, well, do I do a dollar amount? And I said, no, you do a percent. When you get your, you know, pay increase every year, that percent goes up and you don't have to think about it. It just happens. So I love using that percentage for the withdrawal out of your your check into retirement. And just helping her think about, she's saving right now for a down payment on a home. She was able to sit with me. My husband and I are going to be moving closer to her. And she was sat with me learning about how to buy a property. And she's like, wow, that was a lot. But being able to expose your kids to those situations, I think really helps them spark curiosity and interest. And then they're able to, you know, ask better questions of you as a parent.
What other tips do you give for kids to know about money management?
Live within your means. The other thing is the credit card. There, I have seen so many pop up on TikTok. And they're like, it's just unlimited. Why do I have to pay it again? I've already paid for it. You know, and really educating your children on what a credit card is and how best to use it for them. You can model that for them, or you can make suggestions of a couple of different ways. An 8-year-old told her grandma, Grandma, you don't need money. You just need a card. And so realizing the exposure our kids are seeing as we're not using cash anymore, I think makes money conversations more important. But yeah, just learning to, when my daughter went off to college, I sent her with all of the basics covered. You will have 3 square meals, you will have a house, you know, to live in, all of that, clothing, but you get to provide your entertainment. So that small exposure of, okay, I've got to find a way to make money for that. Then the next year I gave her an option of this or this, which was gas and clothing. Which one do you want to take on this year? And every year it was an additional thing for her to start expanding and growing and, you know, basically cutting the cord from mom and dad so she could be independent. And I know some people are like, well, why do they need to be? My sister-in-law passed away unexpectedly, and her kids are realizing that they might not be okay. And having prepared your children for that time of your passing on, and it may be sooner than later, I think is so important, so critical to their success. You know, it might be hard and wanting to do everything for them, but they need to learn. You're going to be gone one day.
What about insurance? We talked about, you know, preparing for the unexpected a little bit. What's your philosophy on insurance? Disability insurance first, and then we'll talk life insurance.
I've never had disability insurance. I guess if somebody really thought, like, money-wise, they needed that, I would support that. I had life insurance always through my employer. And so now I don't, because I have enough money to cover burial costs, right? Because that's all I need right now. House is paid off. Those expenses I need, I don't need anything else. The thing I did buy, which I know not a lot of people would even consider, was long-term care for myself. And I know people are like, oh my gosh, what the heck for? We spent 14 months taking care of my mother after my father passed. She had dementia. And just recognizing that with seven children and how much energy and time it took from us, that my daughter could not do it on her own. So really exploring that, I think your need and your protection level, what you desire from insurance, is where you should put your money.
Yeah, I think general rules of thumb, I would say, if somebody's disabled and they don't have a government job or they get a disability pension, I think they need 2/3 of their pre-disabled income in the form of disability insurance right when they're 20s. They should start, because disability can just ravage your whole retirement plan. And then life insurance, you know, you should get 20 times your pay in, you know, term insurance that's convertible to whole, because as you age, you may want to convert some. But yeah, definitely. I think in the budgeting community, people forget, hey, disability insurance, because that could just ravage people. Long-term care, that whole discussion. We are seeing more and more clients, because I help kind of my clients span the, I mean, we have Gen Xers, we have boomers. I'm seeing like people in their 60s and early 70s get dementia more and more. We have two clients I can think about that they're like 60s and very early 70s, they have Lewy bodies dementia, and they didn't do long-term care insurance, and they're regretting it. And they're having to do all types of Medicaid trusts, and the attorneys that do those trusts take advantage of you, so they charge, I'm hearing bills, $30,000 to do Medicaid trust planning in New York right now. So it is definitely something that people can think about, or should think about. And you do it when you're young, because that's when the insurance is cheap. You know, when you're older, it gets more expensive. But you could ravage everything, and you could save $5 million, and it could be, I mean, the old adage was, you know, if you had, you know, X numbers saved for retirement, you didn't need long-term care insurance. What I'm finding, it's funny, we have a client in out west. They are paying somebody $20 an hour under the table. That's $150,000 a year still for round the clock care. When you go into facilities, that's like $20,000 a month. And the numbers that I'm hearing from clients of what they pay, there are these national studies, like Genworth says, the average cost of long-term care is $70,000 a year or something like that. That might have been 10 years ago, but now I'm hearing more like $20,000 a month for the care you would want. I mean, maybe there's some type of inferior care that's that price, but you know, that's something definitely people should think about. So retirement savings. So you are retired. I'm assuming you're on some type of pension because you worked for the state. Is that correct or no?
Yes. Yep.
How do you, if somebody didn't have a pension, how would you handle, they're ready to retire, what rules or things do you like adhering to? This much in stock, this much in bonds, 4% rule.
So as a financial coach, I can't talk about that with them, right? I really just talk about their needs. So what is their budgeting? So we look at that, how much you're going to need, and then what does that total number look like? For the mix and, you know, diversity and all that, I have my ideas, right? I have my own ways I did it. And sometimes I will share that, but definitely I educate them on what all of that means and then send them to a financial planner to get the support there to really grow it and, you know, comfortably in what they need.
Yeah. What is that distinguishment between financial coaching, which is what you do, and financial advice? Because there aren't many financial, when I think of financial coach, coaching sometimes has a negative connotation because of that Saturday Night Live skit with, you know, Matt Foley, the guy who lives in a van down by the river, you know, that guy.
Yes, yes, exactly. So a financial coach, as a financial coach, I really help with the day-to-day monies. So the household finances, you know, we budget, we save, and that. I always let people know if you're wanting to invest and you want a nice stream, you need a financial coach to help you find that stream to then turn over to your financial advisor to help him grow. But I definitely educate people within the different realms of what they need to be thinking about, looking about. For example, like estate planning, make sure you're working with somebody. This is what it means, and educate yourself. So when you go meet with them, number one, you understand it better and you can ask more curious questions to get them answered pertinent to who you are and what you are. So we do a lot of educating outside of the fact of helping them, you know, achieve those goals.
What about personal savings rate? You talk about, you know, it was really fun to have your own personal savings rate experience. Talk about that, and then also what are tips to, you know, proper amounts of personal savings rate?
They always say start at 10, 20 is the prime, but I really think you can explore like what that means for you. I loved doing my savings rate challenge. So every month I would increase it by 1% until I felt a pinch in my budget that I was like, oh, we're getting too close. That really challenged me on going up. And the savings rate was a culmination of all of it. Retirement, just going into high yield savings, any of that was all figured into there. My health savings account and capturing all of those things and being able to just increase that as much as possible. The person I talked to on the phone last night, she's at like 35% after taxes at a savings rate, which I think is astronomical, but she says she feels like she's playing catch up. And so I really think people not having that pension, right? They really need to be saving and challenging that savings. But thinking about, more importantly, are you going to be leaving your place of employment prior to 59 and a half? And if you are, making sure you're strategizing for that open-ended, you know, time where you're not able to touch your 401.
Yeah, I think if you're making 100 grand or over, you got to be at 20%, you know, you just got to, until you have the sufficient savings that you think you could live off of, if you're making under 100 grand, 10%, 15%, just get off of zero. If you're at zero, go to five, and five, go to 10. Definitely. What other things about coaching haven't we mentioned that you think our listeners should know about?
So as a coach, number one, you're one size fits all. I don't subscribe to that philosophy. So really with coaching, my objective is to help the client figure out what they already know about money. What are their struggles and their challenges? What is causing their blocks? And a lot of this ends up being a mindset. I don't believe mindset will solve everything with money, but I think it's a partner and comes in really nicely. Usually within 3, 4, or 5 sessions, we start identifying why they feel certain ways about certain things. I have a current client who's like, I just need to have more money and I'll feel okay. And I'm looking at her numbers and I said, but you've got $4,000 at the end of the month. Why do you feel like that's not okay? And exploring basically her teenage years and experiences with family. And it wasn't that the family did any bad. They were entrepreneurs. They lost their businesses and then they had a house fire. And just being in that situation has made her, you know, worried and scared. So then I shift her and saying, how can you feel more protected in that? How can we protect you to feel better about that? You know, with insurance, with savings, with, you know, investments, and just going down that road. So I really believe, like, as a coach, we help you discover like who you already are with money and if it serves you well or not. And if you've got a really good point that is serving you well, we really double down on that. And if there's something that's not, we kind of try to figure out why. Two of my other clients is because they did not feel worthy to go get a better paying job. So I find that a lot of individuals making less than $100,000, they feel like they're stuck. And really just recognizing that and being able to put yourself out there to get that raise is sometimes all they need.
Yeah, I think what the biggest thing is, if you're wherever you're making, just start saving. You know, people think that they do. I think they look at their numbers and they say, oh, I'm making 50 grand a year. If I save 10%, I'm going to save 5 grand. And What's that really going to do? But with that attitude, yeah, you're not going to amount to anything. So you have to start, get off of zero, save 10% of your pay. And $5,000 over 10 years is $50,000 at zero interest. 7% interest might be $100,000, and then over 20 years, that 100 turns into 200, so it's may not be a million, but it will be a nice security blanket to kind of get off zero. What about, you made me think about somebody I met with yesterday, and it is, I guess, emotional so much because I saw this couple making a great income. $7,000, save $150,000 in income. They save $7,000 a month. But they could not fathom saving seven. And I proved to them they were saving $7,000. So what we did is kind of a mental hack. They felt it better just with their own logic. Oh, we're going to write $10,000 to the wife, $10,000 to the husband's account, $10,000 to the kid's account. It was like a mental hack that they like. And then we're going to meet 3 to 6 months to try to make sure they save what I think they're saving, which I'm pretty positive because we did a cash flow analysis tool similar to what you might do. And a lot of it is money or like budgeting. I don't want to get in a fight with my wife over organic food. So we don't, talk about it. But I think it's also, you got to know who you're dealing with. Like, and you got to know your spouse. You got to know your significant other. You got to know your whole, my wife's frugal. She's not buying Coach purses and handbags and Louis Vuitton, all that stuff. So, okay, she wants to spend a little extra on organic food. Well, it's not a little extra. That adds up. But, that's her luxury, whatever. She's entitled to it. I have my things.
Yeah. And that's healthy in a relationship, right? To make sure everybody has their own support in the finances.
But you said something like save till it hurts. She didn't say that. You said something better, but I do something that she's been fine with. I like to just save till it hurts once a year. I just write a big, I'm going to do monthly. I'll do some things monthly and some. I just like knowing, okay, how do I do for the year? Boom. Let's wipe this account to zero, and just save what they call in, Bitcoin, in the Bitcoin community, a smash buy. I like to just pound it in. Because for me, that's better emotionally. I don't know why. Some people like dollar cost averaging. I like kind of smash buying because thing is like if it's around I'll spend it on something dumb, so it's like okay I'm just gonna save it. No, I know okay there might be merits to waiting for a downturn or but to me I find that if I wait it never happens.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to know yourself and know your clients, right? And that's why the one size fits all approach. Yeah,
that's a great win. The one size fits all approach that you hear from many of the gurus today, the Susies, the Daves. Although they have different things that benefit people from hearing them, one size fits all generally doesn't because, I've had people too. I think of one guy. I've been trying to. I'm literally very close with this guy. We can't get him in the office to do basic estate planning, for his company. And the state's going to decide the money's going to go to his ex-wife or something who's entitled on everything. And you do have to hack emotional, mental hacks is a big thing I'm getting from this interview. So folks, thank you for joining us on Twitter. Hit the follow button. Go over to Daleen Higgins' Wealthy After 40 podcast. Follow me on Twitter for more. I'm going to be doing another interview around 4:30 Eastern. And no, is it 4:30? It's 5:30 Eastern. Daleen, anything else for our listeners that you think we didn't talk about that you want to share in our concluding moments?
No, but I just want to say, don't believe you can't. Believe you can. Especially over 40, you're not going to make it in time for retirement. Change your belief because I believe you can. And retirement looks different for everyone.
Thank you so much. Daylene Higgins, Wealthy After 40, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.